This is the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And hello and welcome to the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk. We are here for the next 2 hours until 10 a.m. in the UK and, of course, all over the world. So adjust your time accordingly. I'm loving Penelope Pitstop's tweet on X. She said, "My day doesn't start until after 10 a.m. Great show." Thank you, Penelope. We truly appreciate that. It takes a village to raise a child, eh? And at the TNT Village, we are working super hard at the moment to shape this into your unmissable morning news show. I note yesterday that the Big Brother Watch was warning that the data protection and digital information bill may have legal aspects. We will be delving in on that as the show progresses, and I will also be alerting you to that shortly. So let us have a look at what is coming up on today's show. We'll ask if the Angela Rayner saga means that Sir Keir Starmer now looks more vulnerable than ever. We'll also get the latest from Dubai and find out what the flooding there means for foreign travellers. And we'll ask, is it ever acceptable to smack a child? So let me talk about this digital bill that I have referred to quite a lot in the past. So basically, yesterday, Big Brother Watch was warning that the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill may have illegal aspects attached to it. We're that shocked, right? Some of us have been saying this for at least 6 months. 165,000 people have signed a petition urging the government to scrap the bank spying aspect of this bill. This is where banks will be forced to scan all customers' accounts in search of benefit fraud or errors, including the state pension and universal tax credits. Banks would then be required to send unlimited matching account information to the Department for Work and Pensions without account holders' knowledge. Disturbed yet? You should be. Two words here, of course, surveillance state, and a few more with bells on. You know, George Orwell warned us about all of this, right? This is, he just gave us a glimpse of a dystopian future, but it is right here on our doorstep. So the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill, or DPDI for short, has been on the table since September 2022, but it has systematically failed. Then it was hoped that they could introduce it in spring 2023. Again, it failed and they continued tampering with it. The aim was to get it passed into law by spring this year, but that is looking increasingly unlikely given the illegality of some of what they are proposing. So what are they dealing with here and why does it matter? Well, what it would do would amend existing data protection legislation and introduce new provisions in areas such as digital verification services and smart data. We're talking about a widespread use of your personal data coming together under a digital sphere and with the use of AI technology. Obviously, the internet has increased the need for modern protections for people's privacy. And in 1995, the European Data Protection Directive was established to do just that. And the Data Protection Bill is the latest, much more advanced, much more totalitarian stage of that journey. Some of the key changes are to do with personal data, purpose limitation, research. This is about scientific research and can cover all manner of ills that people need to be aware of. Remember how they introduced medical tyranny during CV19? Good, now you're getting an idea. So far, the House of Lords has been fairly robust in challenging this. Friend of the breakfast show, Lord Prem Sikka, has been particularly robust in opposing this. The minister responsible is Michelle Donnellan. She recently used in excess of £30,000 of taxpayers' money to stop herself being sued after she defamed somebody. The bill is about changing the very face of our lives, and with the government holding us to ransom in every area should we fail to comply. Of course, it's being sold to us as this is a great idea. This is about simplifying your data. This is about protecting. This is about protecting you. Why do you think Rishi Sunak was plucked to be put in place of the prime as the prime minister? Well, simply because of his digital background, his money background, all of this links into CBDC, central bank digital currencies. This is a long dreamed of digital scheme that Tony Blair literally could only dream of. And it is happening. It is coming true. It is becoming a reality. And what you need to do is you need to badger your MP. And I don't mean in a harassing way, but you need to get onto your MP, even if you've lost all faith in them. You need to get onto them and say, I have real issues with this. Why is the government intent on snooping in our bank accounts? Because imagine all the innocent victims that will get swooped up in this. They need to remember what happened in the Netherlands in 2021, when 20,000 innocent families were caught up in this trap and accused of benefit fraud, and their benefits were stopped. This is chaotic. You have to wonder sometimes whether this sort of stuff is planned. So let us be clear here. We let your MP know your concerns, even if you don't trust them. We have to keep pushing back. We have to be our own media. We cannot trust them. We cannot trust legacy media. They are in bed on this. They are totally supportive of this bill. We know what they are about. We need people to rise up. This is a form of journalism now like never before. You know, we can do this, right? We have got to. So let's go to work. And on that note, let's find out what's going on with the UK headlines from Gemma Cooper.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And just before we bring in Gemma, the question of the day is it ever acceptable to smack a child? And you can call us here. Here are the numbers.
This is the way we're going to be heard.
From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Bear with me, people. I'm just adjusting to our new setup, and we've only just introduced phone lines to this show. So anyway, good morning, Gemma. How are you today?
Well, all riled up hearing that editorial. And, you know, the banks, they've been spying on us for a while. I think that's what the debanking scandal here in the UK was about with Nigel Farage. Whatever your opinions are about Nigel Farage, he was summarily debanked, wasn't he, by Coutts, owned by NatWest. And that turned into a whole scandal with the chair of NatWest CEO having to resign a position for leaking information to the press. And he wasn't the only one. He's definitely not the only one who's been debanked. He's probably one of the most high profile and the one who, you know, went all guns blazing out into the media talking about it. But other businesses say they've been debanked. Other people with maybe opinions that the banks don't agree with have been debanked. Well, they're spying on you, full stop. This is just another, you know, further intrusion into digging down into your finances and looking at anything you might be doing. You know, I covered a story last year about people who sell as a sideline, you know, vintage clothes and things on the internet, on the various different sites, on eBay, on, you know, on Vinted, things like that. The government want to come after you to take your tax, even if it's just a little sideline and you make £1,000 to go on holiday. They want to look at every single thing you're doing, control the money, take the money. It's a transition of wealth once again, from the poor to the rich. Simple as that. And the banks are absolutely complicit. So you're right. This is going to be a citizen journalism pushback if we haven't got enough on our plates at the moment, you know. But 15-minute cities, all of the stuff we know is coming as part of Agenda 2030. We need to fight it. Yes, it's exhausting. Yes, we've only just come out of the war zone and the trenches of the last 4 years. But this is what we're up against. This, I've said this before, you know, the last 4 years was not an isolated event. It was a dry run to see with what they could get away with, what we will put up with. Will we bend over and take it? No, we won't. We absolutely won't. We're born in this time in history for a reason. It's to push back against control of the human psyche, the human spirit, the human soul. And this is all part of it. Money is an energetic thing. It's an extension of yourself. If you want to get really deep about what money is, what it represents, and people who tightly control their money often have issues in life with control. People who have, you know, spend it often have issues in life with boundaries. There's all kinds of esoteric arguments about money. It's you they're looking at when they look at your bank account. It's you. Push back on this one. I know we've been pushing back for 4 years. It's the truth, honestly. Money, yeah.
It's so interesting, Gem. The only reason I just say that is because I'm literally, like, part of this bill is obviously to do with debanking, and it is about processing can prevent you from accessing your assets, have an impact how your assets are treated. And the fact is that this bill is absolutely determined to do away with structures, boundaries, and due process that are actually designed to protect us. So you're absolutely spot on right. This is very scary indeed. We need massive pushback on this one.
Absolutely, we do. We do. And I know everyone's a bit beleaguered. I know everyone's tired. I know everybody would love a holiday, but we got work to do, people. That's why TNT is here. That's why you're listening, you're watching, you're engaging. You know what this is about. This is a spiritual war. And that's all I'll say about that. Let's get on to some headlines, shall we, this morning. A big headline, which has gained a lot more traction since it first started bubbling around. And this is the woman who would be Deputy Prime Minister if Labour get in, Angela Rayner. She's now facing new questions about her tax affairs. They're not leaving this alone, the mainstream or the Conservative Party. They're coming after her. It relates to the sale of a property, which she says were her main residence. There are questions over this. Did her husband have a main residence? All to do with UK property law and tax law. And now, did she misuse or break council tax law by claiming a single person discount on a property and her brother was living there with her? These are all questions bubbling around in the mainstream today. And I know you'll be discussing this later on with your next guest. Staying with MPs, though, breaking the rules. A Tory MP has been suspended after claims he misused campaign party funds for nefarious reasons. The MP for Fylde denies all the allegations. That's a story that's broken this morning. Also, apparently due to Brexit, I don't know whether you believe this one or not, but there's a huge shortage of drugs, big pharma drugs in the UK, which is affecting millions of people. Can't say I'm sorry for big pharma there on that one. And Scotland, the country that can't seem to get any madder after the introduction of the hate crime law, which has gone down like a cup of cold vomit since April the 1st, it's now emerged this morning that primary schools are now appointing children as young as 4 years old to be LGBT champions. So make of your will of that one. But the Angela Rayner story is gaining more traction. Is it a hit job? Is it a smear campaign? Or did she break the law? And as like all MPs, she should face scrutiny. She's already said if she's found to be done anything wrong, she will stand down. And she's confident that she's in the right and she took the right advice.
Do you think, Gemma, part of this problem is that Angela Rayner and Labour can be so sanctimonious that when finally the opposition party can find something about them, they will absolutely drill in on them, drill down on them. And the same way with legacy media. I think that a lot of the times Angela Rayner and Labour have just become utterly insufferable in how, you know, virtuous they constantly are. So do you think there's an element of that attached to this? Why they are so intent on nailing her?
Very possibly. And I know we're coming to the end of this segment now, and it's a story you're going to expand on with your next guest. But yeah, that is definitely a possibility. You know, the Labour Party should have their MPs affairs looked at just as any political party would. It's normally the Tory party accused of sleaze and breaking rules. So there does seem to be quite a lot of meat on the bone. And Greater Manchester Police have said they've got a dozen strong squad of officers now investigating. Now, you would hope that they would do that because they think there is a case to answer and they think there's enough evidence to look at this. But I'll leave it with you and your next guest to drill down on this story, which is getting bigger in the UK by the day.
It is indeed. We will see you in the next hour, Gemma. Thank you, Gemma Cooper. And we will be right back.
TNT's David Curtin.
I really don't think that they've thought this through, because say you get to the year, okay, 2040, and anyone who's under 31 will not be allowed to buy cigarettes, and anyone who's over 31 will be allowed to. How is that going to be enforced? Will the shops require ID from 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds in the future to see whether they're allowed to purchase tobacco products or not? At the moment, there's no issue, as I say, but in the future, it's going to be completely ridiculous. I don't think that shops will want to do that. It will be essentially unenforceable.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
And of course, our question of the day is it ever acceptable to smack a child? Teresa Wilde said, I was smacked, didn't appreciate it at all. Unfortunately, I did smack my daughter once and she smacked me straight back. Lol, that taught me a thing or two. Didn't appreciate it at all. Unfortunately, I did smack my daughter once and she smacked me straight back. Lol, that taught me a thing or two. That exact same thing happened to me as well, Teresa. We must swap stories one day. Penelope says, oh, our lovely Penelope, who we mentioned at the top of the show. I was smacked, however, I mostly deserved it. Our man said when I was a child, I got smacked too much. I got a fair few scars at the hands of mum and pals. That sounds horrendous, Armand. Right, let us move on and away from smacking at this moment in time. So Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer accused Rishi Sunak of smearing a working class woman after the Prime Minister made a jibe about Angela Rayner's tax affairs during Prime Minister questions yesterday. The police investigation into Rayner is now examining multiple allegations and not just limited to potential electoral law offences. How damaging has this situation been to the Labour leader and those around him who've offered Angela Rayner their support? Now, joining me now with his thoughts on the matter is political correspondent for The Spectator, James Heal. Good morning, James.
Morning.
This is a messy situation that seems to have many legs now, James. Are you surprised at the speed of this story?
Well, I'm surprised perhaps that, after some initial, pauses in the kind of development of the story, that the Greater Manchester Police are following a reassessment, decided to open the police investigation. This story has been rumbling on now for about 2 months, 2.5 months. And at times it seems to have died down. Rayner seems to have blustered and blundered her way through it all. But now, of course, GMP in Manchester have opened quite an extensive investigation. We're led to believe at least a dozen officers are involved. They're considering multiple offences. So I think we didn't see this coming necessarily. But also, I think it's a testament to how badly Labour have had their comms over this, which they've been unable to get their story out. And that's why these questions haven't gone away, because Angela Rayner simply, until last week, wasn't able to answer them properly.
Right, exactly. Lots of running around, wasn't she, and sort of stepping things. So, but this situation, of course, has made Starmer extremely vulnerable to attack, of course, which you and I both know. This is a man who is desperate for Labour brand to be, acceptable and not offensive in any way. So how problematic is this proving to be for him?
I would say it's an irritation and a nuisance rather than a genuine leadership crisis right now. I think he's sort of flip-flopped slightly about how close he wants to be to Angela Rayner. So when he launched Labour's local election results, campaign in March, he was basically saying, I understand what she said. Angela Rayner has said the XYZ. So putting a bit of arm's length distance. And yet in the Commons yesterday, he was saying the Tories are smearing a working class woman. So I think there has been, a sort of difference in terms of how close he's chosen to be to her. But I think that it's clearly, suboptimal to go into a local election campaign, particularly on, a theme of cleaning up politics, when your deputy leader, who herself has made much of attacks on the opposition, is under investigation by the police. And, it's a difficulty for him. And obviously, I've spoken to some people in Labour who are just tired of answering questions about it. It means every media round, they get dominated by these questions of whether or not Angela Rayner has broken the law.
I mean, but let's have a look at that, because obviously Keir Starmer has said that, David Lammy has said that, they've said that the Tories are going after her because she is working class, because she is Northern. You and I absolutely know, as you've just said, we know that she attacks herself. But do you think there is any truth that they're going after her because she's working class and Northern?
No, I don't. And I think that, you know, rather than take the Tories' word for it, you look at what her neighbours were saying when the book came out by Lord Ashcroft, and when they were calling her an effing liar. You know, these are people from her own community who were saying these kind of things. Yes, there's politics involved. Equally, I think in every kind of situation involving Westminster politicians, like Partygate, for instance, there's always a bit of politics involved. And I think that, you know, it's a legitimate issue. She's going to be probably the next Deputy Prime Minister. And, you know, I think that following a police investigation, we will see what that comes of that. It may come of nothing, just like 2 years ago, Durham police investigation came of nothing. But that's fine. I do think the more interesting question in some ways is how Labour continually keeps making communication mistakes when it comes to things like the 28 billion row, when it comes to the Rayner story, when it comes to Gaza. And those are not going to go away anytime soon. And the more interesting institutional question is how that's going to affect a Labour government, because Labour will win probably the election, get into office, but thereafter they're going to be probably buffeted by different crises. And that is going to pose a real issue for Keir Starmer, for party management and the terms of running of the country.
She said she'll resign if she's found guilty of any wrongdoing. But if she's forced to do that, and if she is actually found guilty of wrongdoing, what do you think that says about Keir Starmer's judgment?
It's a very good question. I don't think, from the conversations I've had with Labour MPs, that is so much an issue right now, which is that, look, this was about a story that was 10 years old before he even became leader, before she was even in Parliament. So I think it's one of those kind of historic issues where you've basically got to say, maybe the comms wasn't great on this issue. But, you know, Keir Starmer tried to defend her, you know, and hasn't really, I would say, done much other than sort of encouraging her to get her side out. I think what was telling, I think, was on Friday when she said, "I will resign if I'm found guilty in a criminal investigation." That was quite striking to me. And the first time Rayner's got out ahead of the story. And we've had weeks of these rather weak excuses. You know, you talk about, you know, she's a Northern woman, that there's a different standard for opposition to government, as David Lammy said. I mean, these are just laughable excuses. They're going to be the next government in the United Kingdom, and clearly they should be held to the same standards to which they hold other people.
So you are pretty sure they will be the next government of the United Kingdom?
Yeah, I think you look at the polls, you look at the fact that for the last 12 months, there's been virtually no movement. Labour have been between 15 to 25 points ahead. And therefore, we in the press are presumably treating them as the next government. You know, in the old days, you know, when Corbyn was, no one really paid attention to what Labour was up to so much. But the fact that they're all the attention's on them, and you can see this is in the political coverage as well. Everyone's very excited about what Starmer's up to, etc. And Rayner is fascinating, one of the few genuinely working class people in politics. She always excites a degree of fascination. But equally, you know, she's made much political hay over the past 3-4 years of her deputy leadership out of attacking the Tories at the drop of a hat. So, you know, I don't see why the Conservatives said to me, why shouldn't she be held to those same standards that she demands of everyone else?
It's almost a karma that's taking place here, because she is particularly vociferous and has been for a very long time. And I have no dog in this race, but I have noted that about her. So I think that's quite interesting what's going on with her at this moment in time, because she is something obviously of a thorn in the side of Sir Keir Starmer. And talking about thorns in sides, do you think that Liz Truss's book, I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but do you think that will be something of a thorn in the side to Rishi Sunak? Will that be a problem? Will that aid Labour in any way?
So I have to declare an interest here. I actually wrote the first of the two Liz Truss books back in October 2022, which came out, 2 weeks after she left office. You know, we thought we'd get, you know, 2 years of sales. We got 2 weeks, I think. But so I'm very excited. There's another Liz Truss book by the woman herself. I think, you know, Keir Starmer loves talking about Liz Truss. I mean, it's telling, I think, that the Labour Party talks more about Liz Truss than the Tory Party does. But equally, of course, every time he talks about Liz Truss, as he did yesterday at Prime Minister's Questions, Rishi Sunak stands up and shoots back. Well, you know, either you should spend less time reading that book and more time reading your deputy leader's tax advice, or, you know, talk about Jeremy Corbyn. And basically, you know, the next election in some ways is going to be fought between two ghosts. It's going to be the ghost of Corbyn versus the ghost of Liz Truss. Because both men, you know that their predecessors are some of their weakest spots. And that's why the Tories always talk about, you know, Keir Starmer twice campaigned to make Jeremy Corbyn prime minister. And that's why Keir Starmer will say in response, well, you know, your party crushed the economy.
That's interesting what you just have to say, because obviously once the election trail gets underway, are we going to be seeing both these leaders wanting to distance themselves from their predecessors? And clearly what you're saying is yes, absolutely.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is the issue for Rishi Sunak, is that he probably would have done better if over the last 18 months he distanced himself more from Liz Truss, had put that kind of differentiation above party unity. And we're only seeing it a bit now. We've seen it on occasions when, quite informal settings, where, you know, I was at one of the Westminster Correspondents' Dinners when he made a few jokes from lectern, and maybe a bit more distancing, a bit like, you know, Keir Starmer's done with Corbyn, literally taking the whip away, etc., and, you know, attacking him at every opportunity, might have helped him in the polls to show that he is his own man, and that the Tories, you know, have recovered from the Liz Truss interregnum.
So, I mean, clearly, it sounds like, you know, you have a great deal of time for Liz Truss. Do you think she's been treated shabbily?
Not especially. I think that there is some validity in her criticisms of certain institutions. I think, for instance, it was a disgrace what Joe Biden did and came out and attacked her on the campaign trail when we're supposedly America's closest ally. Equally, though, this is the rough and smooth of the politics, you know, and she was very good at playing the cabinet game. She spent 8 years in cabinet. She reached the top. She's an experienced minister. And, you know, the vicissitudes of politics worked against her. So I don't really have too much time for it. Some of the criticisms I can take note of, but I just think she's the worst person in some ways to be making these claims because she's lost the public argument and lost the public sympathy.
Thank you, James. Really appreciate you joining us this morning on the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk. Everybody, this is James Heal, political correspondent of The Spectator. Take good care of yourself. Have an excellent Thursday, James. We'll be right back.
Question. Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Beijing has hit out at Australia after Canberra announced it was injecting an extra $50 billion into its armed forces over the next 10 years to help counteract China in the Indo-Pacific.
China firmly opposes this. We hope that Australia will correctly understand China's development and strategic intentions.
And Washington has reportedly agreed to spare WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange the death penalty if he is extradited to the US on espionage charges.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Don't worry. Now, a report from the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health concludes that smacking children should be made illegal in England and Northern Ireland, describing current laws as unjust and vague. They add that children suffer lasting mental and physical effects from being smacked in the home. Striking a child is already illegal in Scotland and Wales and in many other countries around the world. But the government say parents are trusted to discipline their own children. And we are asking today on the Breakfast Show, is it ever justifiable to smack a child? And what lasting mental and physical effects do they suffer from such punishment? Now, joining me to discuss this is psychologist and writer Wendy Gregory. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning.
What have you made of this report, Wendy?
Well, I think it's kind of long overdue, really. I personally think that all the evidence shows us that smacking children is not an appropriate or acceptable way to discipline them. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't discipline children. Children need to learn boundaries. They need to have rules. They need to be disciplined. That's why they have parents. But it's the way in which you do it. And hitting a child is, well, first of all, it's telling them that it's okay when you're angry or when you don't like someone, the way someone's behaving, that it's okay to hit them. And do you really want your child to grow up thinking that? It also, there's lots of research that shows that it does affect their mental health. Generally, children have poorer mental health if they have been chastised physically as children. They grow up, they can grow up to be more aggressive themselves, to be abusive in relationships and so on. So I don't think it's ever really justifiable. Just because you're bigger and you're stronger and you're more powerful than a child, what gives you the right to hit them?
And also, I've always considered it. One of the people who wrote in this morning in response to our question of the day talked about how she once smacked her child and her child smacked her back. Now, this, obviously, the thing is, you know as well as I do, Wendy, it's so difficult having a child. They don't come with a manual attached to their toe or anything. So you have to kind of work out. You have to, you know, do the job on the job, right? So it can be difficult. So in the early days, when my daughter was about two or something, I did smack her and she immediately smacked me back. And that was the first and last time ever that I smacked her, because she immediately showed me very clearly what I had just taught her. And that is it, isn't it? We're teaching children to be violent and to be bullies when we smack them.
Absolutely. And you're not the only one. Sonia, I'll put my hand up. I smacked my children when they were young. It was before I was a psychologist, but I actually regret that now. You know, I'm actually quite ashamed of it. And I realised that I taught my children how to lose their tempers. And you know, I wish that I hadn't done that, because there are so many other ways in which you can discipline a child appropriately. But as you said, what it does, all it does, it doesn't really teach them not to do something. It just makes them angry. They just get angry back with you. Hence, they hit you back. So yes, that shows you it's not a sensible way to try and discipline your child.
And yet we still do it. And I do find it quite extraordinary. It is actually still legal in this country to do it, because obviously I can't go out and smack an adult. That is illegal. And yet it's legal to smack somebody who's much, much smaller than you and more vulnerable than you. It's inverted, isn't it?
It really is. And for a long time, the law, there's been a very grey area. So it is illegal to cause physical injury to a child, but reasonable chastisement is okay. But that's, of course, it's very subjective. You know, what one person thinks is reasonable chastisement is quite different to another's. And it does give people almost a charter to do whatever they want. And it's all very well saying, yes, parents should be trusted to bring up their children. And by and large, I agree with that. However, the reason that we have laws is because people can't always be trusted to do the right thing. And I think by getting rid of that grey area, by having an absolute line, those parents who are wavering, not quite sure, you know, is it okay to smack, isn't it? Then it isn't. And there's no sort of black and white. There's no grey area there. It's black and white. It's not okay. And in the many countries, I think there's 65 countries that have had banned smacking, and some for quite a long time, they've shown a very, very significant drop in the number of people that approve of smacking children. In Sweden, which was the first country, and I think it's 1979, they banned smacking children, and now 87% of their young people say they've never been smacked. So it does change attitudes over time. It really does. A bit like the seatbelt law, you know, before we were told we had to wear seatbelts, yes, people didn't wear them. But now we all do, and we don't really even think about it. But it will make people, those people who will cross the boundaries, because we all lose our tempers sometimes, we know that. And I guess even though people know they're not allowed to actually injure their children, if you do lose your temper, and as we know, children know how to wind you up better than anybody else on earth.
Yes.
So, but those people that struggle to hold that temper, how do they know when they're going too far? And before they know it, maybe they have gone too far. But if it's at an absolute ban, then they know that they can't do that. They have to find another way to chastise their children. But I do also think, I know quite a lot of the argument here has been about, oh, you know, the government being over-involved, but the government are already involved. We make our children go to school. We're told how to raise our children. So it's only just one step further to introduce a smacking ban.
I think it's really interesting, and I'm particularly happy that you're with us this morning, because I'd like to know psychologically how this impacts the parent-child relationship. Because when you smack your child, surely that impacts the trust that your child feels for you.
Yes, it does. And I think we don't want our children to do what they're told because they're afraid of us. Ultimately, we want them to understand the reasoning behind why we're telling them to do something or not to do something. I accept that when they're really little, when they're 2, 3, 4, they're not really capable of intellectually of reasoning. So we'd still have to draw the boundaries and create the rules. And you don't need to explain to a 2-year-old why they can't do something, because they're not actually interested. They don't want to know the reasons behind. But we still don't have to smack them. But I think the aim ultimately is for children to understand the reasons why we don't allow them to do certain things, because it may be harmful to them, it may cause them harm, it may cause someone else harm. And it's not okay. It's not okay to hurt other people, etc. So it does impact, I think, on the parent-child relationship. There is quite a bit of research which shows that children who were regularly smacked have poorer relationships with their parents going into the teenage years and beyond.
I mean, that is interesting in its own right, really. So, but I mean, obviously, as you've acknowledged, children need and actually want boundaries. They need discipline. So how do we do it in a productive way that we can all benefit?
Well, it depends what age you're talking about, of course, you know, different ages.
So starting off from young, when we're first introducing discipline and boundaries to our children, what would be the appropriate way if a child is like wanting to stick their fingers into sockets and stuff?
Well, of course, you just keep pulling them away. And there is such a thing as reasonable restraint. Sometimes you have to restrain them because they do. I've got a 2-year-old granddaughter and she regularly tries to run out into the road.
Right. So daughter was a runner. I understand. I relate. It's scary. And I actually put reins on my child. And yes, I remember somebody walking past me in the street and saying, that baby is not a dog. And the way people interfere as well, it's quite difficult. But yeah, I take your point. We have to restrain children, obviously, for their own safety.
Of course we do. But if it's just something like, I mean, she's testing the boundaries. She really is testing the boundaries. So if she started to spit the other day when I was with her at playgroup, and I was mortified. Where's she got that from? We haven't taught her to do that. But it was just about being very firm with her. And I just looked at her and said, no, we don't spit. It's not okay to spit. It's nasty. And then she went to do it again. And I just looked at her and I said, you better not. And she stopped. Just the firm voice is often enough at that age. But when children are very young, what they want is your approval. They want your love and approval more than they want anything else. So if you pull back, and I'm not saying you go all passive aggressive, stomp off in a tantrum yourself, but if you withdraw and say, no, you know, mummy doesn't like that, that's not a nice thing to do to people, quite often they will respond to that. Of course, as they get older, you can use more practical strategies. So withdrawal of a favourite toy or withdrawal of privileges, time out, even when they're quite young, the naughty step, I'm all in favour of a naughty step. Or if they're a bit bigger, putting them in their room for a limited amount of time, like you're going to sit there for, you know, 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it is, not for ages and ages and ages, because that's distressing to you. And you know, calm yourself down. And when you're ready, you can come back down. And that's a very effective way. With teenagers, I think the very, very best sanction is grounding, because teenagers want to hang out with their friends.
Yes.
Or planning their social media time. But
no, yes.
Video games. So it's
absolutely
finding something that is important to them. And I actually asked my children when they got to be teenagers. I had stopped smacking them long before that. You'd be glad to know. Great. They would have beaten me up, I think. They grow bigger than me, as they do. But, I mean, I actually asked mine. I remember asking my older daughter when she was 12, and she wasn't a particularly compliant young woman. I said, what would really work to stop you doing something? And she said to me, take my phone off me because I can't live without it. So they can actually be remarkably honest with you. As you said, Sonia, they want to have those boundaries. They want to feel safe. And when I was, because I did a lot of work counselling in schools with young people, and the second most frequent complaint I heard from them was, I wish my mum was stricter with me. Now, who'd have thought
Wow.
it? Who'd have thought
what,
it? You
know? What a sobering thought to end this conversation. Wendy, you have to come back and talk about narcissism. I know you're a specialist in it, and I believe that answers so many questions about our society. So thank you so much for joining us this morning, you're giving welcome. Us an insight into the psychology of child smacking. Everybody, this is Wendy Gregory. We will be right back.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought for so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution. One rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is him. Every day he's hungry for something. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then it kind of starts to work itself out.
Live from London, you're with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back. And of course, our question of the day is it ever acceptable to smack a child? And you can call us, and here are our numbers.
Thanks for listening to us. Now, we want to listen to you. Our lines are open from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Now, joining us today for a roundup of some of the biggest stories is political commentator Tom Sullivan, and a regular round here. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Sonia. How are you?
Great, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. We have quite a lot in front of us to be going on with. One of them, of course, is this warning that primary schools face catastrophic wave of closures, fears plummeting, that we've had a COVID birth rate, an increase in homeschooling, could see a surge in shutdowns with as little as 6 pupils registered in a year, as more than 90% of parents get their first choice. So tell us, what do you think is going on here?
I mean, there's so much going on with this. It's actually one of the most important issues of our time. And it's not just here. It's not just in the West. It's around the whole world, especially in places like Japan, Korea, but China. I think I might be wrong, but I think Africa's the only place where birth rates aren't plummeting. People have this, you know, the ordinary person in the street probably wrongly has the impression that there are too many people on the earth. We're told that, or we're always nudged that or signaled that. But it takes you just a couple minutes on Google, actually, to realize that we're in a very tricky situation. And I think it's even more dangerous when our birth rates are plummeting, but we're importing large groups of people who have very high birth rates. That's not going to work out well. Do you know what, Sonia? Until a few years ago, I was very convinced that it was all social. People didn't want to get married. They wanted to, you know, date longer. Girls wanted to have their careers. Guys probably didn't complain if they were able to, you know, kind of sleep around and not have to commit. And instead of, you know, putting down a mortgage for a house or whatever, they just have to take someone on a fancy date, but I'm starting to be convinced now that there's a lot more going on. House prices, I do think that's a real thing, actually. It's a horrible combination of things. I'm not an expert on this, but there is a lot of talk around, maybe you know better than me, about infertility rates, whether it's from the contraceptive pill or other things. But as always, it's like a large mishmash of different crises have come together for not very good outcome. And I don't really know how we get out of it. I think in countries like Hungary, where there's a massive big state push to, I think they introduced a thing recently, whereas if you have your third or fourth child, you don't pay income tax forever. We have very, very weak things. I don't know if it still exists. Probably they'll get rid of it for being, against equality. But I think you get a very small tax break if you're married in the UK. But it's nowhere near what we actually need. But I don't see that happening anytime soon because it's kind of not on people's agenda, where it's I don't know why people, I guess we're not really connected to the past or invested in the future at the moment. It's such a me, 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 now society. I really don't know where we'd even begin having this discussion about our future.
I think that's a very good point you've just made there, because I think that there are a number of things. I think this is a complex issue, and I think there are many contributing factors, and I think one has to be financial, unquestionably. But the other, I think, absolutely is that Western society has largely become very navel-gazing, very, very selfish, you know, all about me. You see that echoed on social media. Sheer volume of selfies that some people put out is like they are literally only thinking about themselves on a constant basis. They don't have room for, you know, anybody else in their lives, and certainly not a little character. But I do think that the manufactured financial crisis that we have been subjected to will be a contributing factor, absolutely. And I'm just looking at some of this information, Tom, and I find it quite extraordinary that Islington, for example, in North London, right? So one of the primary schools, the Blessed Sacrament Catholic Primary School, that is going to be axed, despite being rated good by Ofsted. But the school has spaces for 210 children, but only 76 are registered. And I find that extraordinary in London, because as you say, we're constantly being told we've too many people, we're overpopulated, we're being overrun. So these stories aren't even adding up, are they?
I mean, that's quite surprising, to be honest. I mean, you know, the demographic of Islington, yeah, there probably are a lot of professionals and, you know, the demographic of people who might not be that interested in having children. But that's quite surprising, shocking even, because you think it would be made up by, I don't know, the immigrant population. But yeah, that's very surprising indeed.
So the next story I'd like to move you on to is obviously to do with the data protection bill that is going through, an egregious piece of legislation. I don't know if you've looked into any of it, but part of it is about the issue of getting sex right. Now, we know there has been a continuing issue about problems to do with sex. There's been a conflation of sex and gender and a confusion going on there. And Sex Matters, which is an organisation that sprung up around the whole Maya Forstatter judgment when she was released from her job for knowing the difference between biological sex and gender. But what do you think about this issue in terms of Sex Matters, and that the government finally has a chance to sort out this sex mess that has been taking place?
Sorry, I think, do you know what, to be very honest with you, Sonia, I think even if they sort it out, I think this might just be a kind of technical thing. I think the horse has bolted, if that's the right phrase on this issue. I mean, again, it's another example of one of the most fundamental things about human nature, about our society, you know, along with, are we recreating ourselves? Will the human race survive? Along with that is one of the two fundamental building blocks of the human race, men and women. And a lot of people say, you know, why do we talk about this so much? And obviously working in the media, sometimes I say that. Sometimes I say, do we really need to give this topic airtime? But it is a social contagion, especially among young girls. And I think it's much more sinister than, ruining women's sports or creating, you know, potential dangers in, I mean, let's be frank, there's already dangers for women just walking on the street certain times of night in certain parts of our cities, let alone, you know, kind of bath changing rooms at leisure centres or whatever it is. But honestly, I think that, and this is, you know, call me tinfoil hat or whatever, but I think that with our population growth going down, with all the push that we saw, it hasn't gone away. It's just kind of receded into the background. You can see interviews with kind of people talking about this openly, the want to live forever and that, you know, to merge with machines and become transhuman. And I honestly think the whole transgender thing is actually a kind of a stepping stone towards that. I mean, it's crazy, Sonia. It's crazy. And these
crazy.
I didn't realize, like, I think, you know, a long time ago when this wasn't even a thing, even I might have just said, you know, if people want to do that, fine. But when you actually look into these surgeries, I think it should be illegal. I think you shouldn't be able.
Of course, to it do should.
That. Someone absolutely. Someone who's in the mental state, and they're like, right, I really want you to chop off my genitals and surgically create for me a fake genital. You really need help. And as a society, if we do anything other than say, you're very troubled, let's have a chat, we need to talk this through. If we do anything other than that, let alone, you know, acquiescing to these kind of demands and saying, yeah, we'll do that, we'll turn you into kind of human Frankenstein, I really think that opens the door for a lot of other scary things. And I don't think this is disconnected to the push for euthanasia. Again, I also used to be kind of receptive to the argument, if you're in so much pain and you're on your deathbed and you've had a good innings and blah, 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 fine. But now you see in Canada and the Netherlands, it's like 25-year-olds who have depression have been, you know, given state-assisted, state-sponsored suicide. That's crazy. And I think it's all just part of this really nihilistic hyper-individualism. Yeah, if I want to, you know, chop off my bits and become a kind of mangled freak, yeah, not only is that my right, but you, the taxpayer, should have to pay for it.
But it's insane. We don't treat like anybody else.
It's the most, sorry,
it really is.
The most vulnerable people in society who are being pushed into this.
Yeah.
And
we
just
don't treat.
Fronts, it's wrong.
But Tom, we don't treat other people with mental health issues in this same way. We don't say to anorexics, that's really great, we're going to help you become even more skinny. We don't do that. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And it's madness that this has been allowed to happen. And I
the
totally
terms
agree
are very,
with you.
Similar, you know, they're not exact same word, but gender dysphoria and body dysmorphia, I think.
Yes.
But I mean, for me, I don't see a massive difference, you know. But the increase, everyone you talk to who's kind of worked in or adjacent to this sector or studied it, all say the same thing, that it always used to be middle-aged men who thought they were ladies, right? That's the Little Britain sketch, I'm a lady.
Well, it's still a huge demographic.
But now it's young girls.
It's the two.
Another social contagion. So not only a young girl saying, I don't want to get married, you know, getting married and raising kids and being in the home is slavery, but getting on the tube and working 9 to 5 in an office, making money for the man, that's freedom, right? Not only are they under that pressure, but now they're under pressure to literally become men physically. No wonder we're not having enough children to replace us.
Oh my God, Tom, you've just answered our question. You've literally just answered the first question. That is hugely it as well. We've become so ill at ease with our bodies, with other people around us. It's a wonder we're having any sexual relationships at all. But of course, this story emanates from the fact that people are literally allowed to change their sex markers on official documents. So you have people, you know, organizations like HM Customs and Excise, HM Passport Office, the National Health Service. People can literally change their sex marker by saying, I am a so if I could just rock up and say, I am a man, I now identify as a man. And the worry, of course, with this digital and data bill is that suddenly we're going to have a whole swathe of people who by default are going to become the opposite sex based on a legal fiction. So even our laws are becoming a lie because of this. Our laws are literally lying in order to accommodate people with serious mental health issues.
Just like in the Soviet Union, you know, that is the roads to hell, basically, when you just even the state does not recognize fact and you lose a common language of reality. From there, it can go to very dark places, I'm afraid.
I agree with you. Before you leave us, Tom, I have to ask you about our question of the day. Do you think that it's right to smack children?
Within reason, yes. As a former unruly child myself, my life was probably saved from climbing up very dangerous walls when I was told not to. And a decent smack was the only thing that stopped me to doing that. And it's just more intrusion. We already have laws for people who abuse their children. And this grey area, you know, is just another increase of the, I think nanny state is even too kind a phrase, actually, of what we're seeing now.
So do you think, so is that what you're resisting though? Because Tom, you don't strike me as a smacker, right? So are you are you railing against the nanny state? Because we hate that, don't we? They're already interfering too much. You're absolutely right. And especially
I'm
with raising our
children.
I'm railing
against the pressure against parents who actually, the number one concern of a state should be its national security and the preservation of its people. And without parents, you have no people, you have no children, you have no demos in a democracy. So I think any more pressure on parents, which, as we've discussed, already find it hard enough, is probably not a good thing.
I'm going to read you some comments, Tom. I think you're going to like this one. John says people will willingly transfer their consciousness to a computer framework in the future to escape the dystopia that's being created. And that's a reality, isn't it? This is 1984, as near as damn it, Tom. Did you imagine a world like this where you're expected to call men women, women men, and all manner of other stuff? Basically, ignore the evidence of your eyes. The party told you so.
Like so much stuff, Sonia, even like 10 years ago when I was in university and I was studying, you know, the war in Ukraine, the trans thing, it all was interesting to talk about, but it still didn't feel exactly real. And now it's reality and it's happened so fast. And I have no pleasure in saying to everyone, I told you so.
You don't, I do. Listen, Tom, thank you so much for being a brilliant guest as ever.
Pleasure as always, Sonia.
Oh, wonderful to have you with us, everybody. Tom Sullivan, broadcast journalist and commentator and all-round good egg. We'll be back in the next hour. See you shortly.